So, hello everyone. while I was waiting, Lynn, are you here? Are you in, physically in the room? Yep, you're here. Good, because I want to say something to you. While I was waiting, Lynn, for my turn to speak, I just was goofing off, and just to see what popped up, I typed into Yahoo Pueblo, A Course in Miracles. And something popped up that I'm not aware of, and I'm not sure you're aware of it either. It's actually coming from a Course in Miracles directory. I'm not sure who maintains this directory. I'll have to look a little further. But it has a lot of people in it that we need, that we know. You know, like Alan and Margaret Dollett, Nick Arandez, Myron Jones, Pam Silberman, you know, Liz Cronkite, David Hoffmeister, lots of people that we know are listed here as Course in Miracles teachers. And then it lists how to get in touch with them. And there's somebody listed here for Pueblo. And let's see, where is he? His name is Dr. Gary Fearn, F-E-A-R-N. And it says there's a free Course in Miracles group that meets on Sundays at 9:30. And then it gives his telephone number, website, and email. Yeah, so, you know, I'll check into that after I get done teaching here, but I was kind of interested to see something pop up, you know, that we aren't all aware of. Let's see, what's the link? Well, his website link actually was no longer good. I was just doing a random search. I just typed in Yahoo. Let's see, the link. Okay, here's the link where the teacher's directory is. In fact, I can just give it to you in the room because I am as admin. So here's the link to the teacher's directory. There you go. And for the recording and the radio, it's the-course-in-miracles.com. And then it's A Course in Miracles Teacher's Directory, HTML. But the main website is the-course-in-miracles.com. So I'll check into that, Lynn. We'll see if this is updated or if this is old, and if so, if there's a group of course people around here that we don't know about, it might be nice to get to know them. we're here now, however, for the seven steps to awakening, continuing from last night. Number 376 is where we are going to begin today. And I'll give you that link in just a moment, but there's actually a song I like to listen to. I actually only started listening to this song a month ago. A month ago, you may remember Andy Williams passed on. And when Andy Williams passed on, I spent a little bit of time that day listening to some Andy Williams music because I grew up with Andy Williams. And, you know, that was my mom's favorite singer. And so when he passed on, I was just enjoying listening to some of his music. But I haven't listened to Andy Williams in many years, since I grew up. So we're probably talking at least 30 years since I've really listened to him. And so as I was hearing the songs on the day that he passed, as I was hearing the songs again, of course I was hearing them differently. I was hearing them through the lens of A Course in Miracles and NTI and Seven Steps to Awakening and all of that. And there's one song that I really fell in love with. He's not the only one that sings it. Many of the... excuse me, I'm losing my voice. Hold on. Many of the singers from his time sang this song. It was a popular song. But it's called The Impossible Dream. I'm sure probably many of you, if not all of you, are familiar with the song. But as I listened to The Impossible Dream, as Andy was singing it, you know, through the lens of A Course in Miracles and NTI and Inner Ramana and Seven Steps, you know, what I heard was not just a willingness, but a determination to awaken, you know, with just absolute trust and absolute faith. You know, no matter what the ego would throw at us, and including no matter how much the ego would say it's impossible, you know, start singing from Cinderella, impossible, you know. you know, this song just has such determination in it. And it even, you know, if you listen to it with the right mind. It even talks about dying before the body dies, so that when the body dies, there's only peace. And it's really a wonderful, and for me now, an inspirational song that I do enjoy listening to from time to time. So I thought that maybe we would just start by listening to a bit of Andy Williams. So here we go, Andy Williams, The Impossible Dream.
To fight the unbeatable foe, to bear with unbearable sorrow, to run where the brave dare not go, to right the unrightable wrong, to be better far than you are, to try when your arms are too weary, to reach the unreachable star. This is my quest, to follow that star. No matter how hopeless, no matter how far, to be willing to give when there's no more to give, to be willing to die so that honor and justice may live. And I know if I'll only be true to this glorious quest, that my heart will lie peaceful and calm when I'm laid to my rest. And the world will be better for this, that one man, scorned and covered with scars, still strove with his last ounce of courage to dream the impossible dream, to reach the unreachable star.
So let's go from that directly into silence. Amen. All right. So did you like it too, Lynn? The day that Andy Williams passed, I think I must have listened to that song 20 times. I could probably, you know, I will resist, but I could probably spend the next hour and a half listening to it. And I'll go ahead and keep it up. That way, if we have, you know, 3 spare minutes at the end and I don't know what to do with it, we'll close with the same song. Because I think it's pretty wonderful myself. But for now, let me give you all a link to number 376, which is where we are beginning today with the 7 steps. For those of you who are listening on the radio, you want to go to RDA7. That is the digit 7. It is not spelled out. RDA7stepsjournal.wordpress.com. And when you get there, you'll go to step 2 on the menu bar across the top. And then click on the numbering sequence that will allow you to find your way to number 376. And I see that Lynn is saying that song is from the play Man of La Mancha, which I don't think I've actually seen that play. So maybe sometime I'll see if I can find a DVD of the musical and watch it. It's an amazing song. All right, so we're going to begin with number 376. And these quotes are coming originally from a book called The Supreme Yoga. But I'm reading directly from another book called The Seven Steps to Awakening, and I am on page 71. All right, so here we go. Quote number 376. He sees the truth who knows that the self alone exists and that there is no substance to objectivity. Again, this is a continuation from last night. Last night, quotes 374 and 375 also started with, he sees the truth who, and then went on to describe how one who sees the truth would see. So this is the third quote in a row that begins with, he sees the truth who. So, hello, sought after. All right, so here we go again, quote number 376. He sees the truth who knows that the self alone exists and that there is no substance to objectivity. So let's go ahead and click on the journal and look at 376. This again is what I wrote after contemplating this quote in the Seven Steps to Awakening. Wisdom knows itself as the only reality. It does not give meaning or substance to illusory appearances, knowing them to be unreal. It's funny because this actually reminds me of a post on a Facebook group that I'm in called Awakening Together, which is actually a Facebook group that I have for people who are kind of using A Course in Miracles, NTI, Inner Ramana, Seven Steps, The Most Direct Means to Eternal Bliss, that type of things all together. And the reason that I created a Facebook group for people who are using all of these sources together is because we tend to have almost a unique vocabulary in that, you know, in one breath we may say Jesus, Holy Spirit, or God, and in the next breath, you know, we may talk about Nisargadatta, Ramana, there is no I, you know, the I thought is false, and it's kind of a mixture of two worlds, but for us it's not two worlds, it's one world. And sometimes when we were on other groups and we would mix our language up in that way because they weren't familiar with all of these sources, it would result in confusion or discussion. So it just felt appropriate to start a Facebook group for people who really were able to use both Holy Spirit and, you know, non-dual Nisargadatta speak, use both without confusion. So that's what the group is. It's called Awakening Together. And if anybody feels that they belong in that group and are not in that group, but you feel that you use all of those sources effectively and you would like to chat with us, just email me at reginadonakers@yahoo.com and I will add you to the group. But anyway, this morning in the Awakening Together group, there was a little discussion that was started. And the discussion was started when one friend said that she woke up this morning with a line in her mind, a thought that appeared when she woke up, I am not responsible for the world I see. And it's kind of interesting because A Course in Miracles, of course, teaches us that we are responsible for the world that we see. And that is probably the first thing that I really needed to learn because, like everyone else, I was into the blame game. You know, I would, blame politics, blame my child, blame, you know, my parents, blame my boss, blame the weather, blame whatever, just blame anything for the way I felt. And so the first thing I needed to learn was that I am responsible for the world I see. And I really needed to learn to not ever blame anything, that my experience only comes from me, and that if I was upset for any reason, what I needed to do is look back at me, look back at my thoughts, back at my beliefs, and find out what filter in my mind was causing this upset. And I lived wholeheartedly by this rule, wholeheartedly, you know, which led to some very effective healing, you could say. Very effective healing occurred. But at some point, the teaching began to change. And it's funny because in duality, you know, we think it's either I am responsible for the world I see, or it is I am not responsible for the world I see. It can't be both. And at some point, the teaching began to change to I am not responsible for the world I see. But that's because it was now coming to teach a different point. I had already effectively learned to take responsibility for my experience. Now what I needed to begin to learn was that whatever I saw, well, it had no meaning to the point that in reality it doesn't even exist. So it became kind of a different lesson. And as it became kind of a different lesson, then a shift occurred to where it became, I'm not responsible for the world I see. And the reason I'm not responsible for the world I see is because it's not really there. You know, you can't be responsible for something that doesn't exist. And in fact, in this discussion, I quoted from the Seven Steps to Awakening, number 230B in my journal, where it says, it is time to take full responsibility for the seeing, but this does not imply responsibility for the making. What is not there has not been made. Therefore, you cannot be responsible for making it. And this point is also very important, because if what we perceived was real, and if we had made it, I mean, as you know, it seems to be a lot of suffering and such. If it was real and we had made it, then the idea of guilt would probably also be true. And so the realization that it's not real, the realization that it's only an appearance, it has not been made, and I'm not responsible for it because it doesn't exist, that's another important realization to come in its time. And that's really where this particular quote, number 376, that takes us back to the journal, that's where this is pointing. Notice it says, wisdom knows itself as the only reality. It does not give meaning or substance to illusory appearances, knowing them to be unreal. You know, one of the best examples that we see used over and over again, well, the two examples that we see used over and over again to help explain this is, one, the example of a dream, and two, the example of a mirage. And in fact, I had a dream one day. It may still be coming up in the journal as we go forward, but I had a dream one day, something about someone had broken into my house. And I went into the kitchen, and I caught this person in the kitchen. And for some reason, I knew, it was like this intuitive knowing, that I needed to break his jaw. And my first thought in the dream was, I can't, I'm not strong enough to break his jaw. But then there was just this knowing that it was something I had to do. And because I had to do it, I could do it. And what I did was I put my hands in his mouth, and I pulled, you know, the top part of the mouth up and the bottom part of the mouth down, and I pulled it with enough force that the jaw just snapped. And then I woke up. And when I woke up, the very first thought that came into my mind was, that was not real. There was no burglar. I did not catch him in the kitchen. I did not break his jaw. So can you say that I was responsible for breaking his jaw? You can't say that I was responsible for breaking his jaw because it never happened. So how could I be responsible? So it's kind of funny because we don't want to, we want to have a clear understanding of both the I am responsible and the I am not responsible thoughts. We never want to use anything to deny something that is helpful to our awakening. I am always responsible for my experience. Always. And to this day, I live by that. If something was to upset me, if someone was to type something in the room right now that seemed to cause me to feel upset, unsure, put down in some way, what I would not do is I would not then blame the comment or the commenter. I would very quickly look at my mind to see what was causing me to have that experience. Because the comment itself is completely meaningless. It's nothing. It's nothing. Just like breaking that man's jaw was nothing. It didn't exist. So if I'm giving it meaning, I need to find what in my mind is giving it meaning. And that way I am responsible. But where I'm not responsible is that, there's an idea that gets in our mind sometimes that if my mind is completely healed, no one will ever insult me again. That idea is a little cockeyed, because what that idea is saying is that the insult is meaningful. It does mean something. And the only reason it continues to happen is because there's a thought in my mind that is continuing to cause it to happen. And if that were true, then Jesus would have been, hanging on the cross saying, oh my God, what thought is still in my mind that I could be crucified? If that were true, then Ramana Maharshi would have been saying, oh my goodness, what thought is still in my mind that my body can have sarcoma? Instead, they came to see those events as having no meaning, no reality, no substance. Therefore, how could anyone be responsible? Just like I'm not responsible for breaking the man's jaw in the dream. But we know that we still need to take responsibility for the way we perceive if we're not at peace. If the comment in Facebook or the comment in the room is upsetting me. If something my family member says or does is upsetting me. Again, I don't want to use it's not real to deny that, which is another error that I think we make. We take it's not real to deny it rather than taking full responsibility and looking at it and seeing what in my mind is causing me to be upset. Why isn't this meaningless to me? Where am I giving it meaning? So it's kind of like both teachings are true. Both the teaching I need to take full responsibility is true, and the teaching I'm not responsible is true. And with inner guidance and inner clarity, we know, you could say, when to apply which teaching, when it's appropriate in the current moment. But ultimately, as number 376 says, wisdom, when we're purely in the right mind, and there is no more wrong mind at all, right? Then wisdom knows itself as the only reality. And it does not give meaning or substance to illusory appearances, knowing them to be unreal. And so there is no sense of responsibility because there is no sense of reality there, right? So that's number 376. And what we can do now is scroll down and click on number 377. And if you aren't in the journal and would like to be, here is a link to the journal, number 377. And Jamie's knocking on the door. Hold on, let me let her in. And what I will do, of course, is start by reading number 377 from the book, The Seven Steps to Awakening. It's very short. It says, "Mind alone is this universe. Mind alone is this universe." And of course, the word mind here, as I explained in an earlier recording, is not the same as the mind of God in A Course in Miracles. The mind of God would be before the tiny mad idea, prior to the tiny mad idea. And in the Advaita language, they tend to call that awareness or consciousness. The mind of God would be the same as awareness or consciousness. In Advaita language, when they refer to mind, they are referring to the ego, to that mind, the mind that asked the tiny mad idea question and believed the tiny mad idea question and followed the tiny mad idea question. So when it says mind alone is this universe, that's really the same as A Course in Miracles saying God did not create the world, right? It's saying that this comes from ego or from the tiny mad idea. So mind alone is this universe. All right, let's look at number 377 in the journal. Thought and illusion are one. Attachment to thought is attachment to illusion. So by thought here, we are referring to everything that comes from, every idea that is birthed out of what the Course would call the tiny mad idea. So let's assume that the tiny mad idea was something like, what if everything was different than it is? And that's the way that NTI Romans 2 explains the tiny mad idea, that it was a question like that. What if everything were different than it is? And once that first what if question is asked, then what happens is the mind enters into kind of a daydream where it starts playing with this idea and it starts making differences, which we call separation, and it starts reacting to what it made, which makes more, and the whole world and all human thought is birthed out of this. It's interesting because in the teachings of Inner Ramana, it basically says that even the human thought that we call Holy Spirit is because of this error. It's not that the Holy Spirit is part of the error, because it's not, but the Holy Spirit is the correction to the error. And the correction would not be necessary if the error had not been made. So you can really say all human thought, both what we might call right-minded and wrong-minded human thought, comes from the error, or is because of the error. And in fact, A Course in Miracles talks about this too. A Course in Miracles talks about forgiveness, for example, which comes from the right mind or the Holy Spirit. But it says that forgiveness is an illusion, because forgiveness would not be necessary if it wasn't for an error, right? It also talks about the real world, which is the correction for the world that we see. But A Course in Miracles says the real world is still a dream. It's not reality. So reality, or what A Course in Miracles would call the mind of God, or what A Course in Miracles would call heaven, or what we might call God, or self with a capital S. I mean, we have lots of names that we put on it, but that is completely untouched. That is completely changeless. That, you could say, is before the tiny mad idea. An illusion is starting with and after the tiny mad idea, both the deceptive illusion and the corrective illusion, right? Are after the tiny mad idea. Reality is before, or prior to. And when I say before or prior to, I don't mean in time, because time itself is an illusion. But if we were looking at it on a linear flow chart, it would be that which was before and continues now also, but is still before the tiny mat idea. So if we look at number 377, where it says thought and illusion are one, it means that all thought that came from the question, what if everything were different, all of that is illusory, all of it. And then the next statement says, attachment to thought is attachment to illusion. So if I am attached to any ideas in my mind, and I assure you, you know, I am, if I am attached to any ideas in my mind, then I am also attached to illusion. And one thing I need to give my willingness towards is detaching from the thoughts in my mind. Because as I detach from the thoughts in my mind, I also detach from illusion. While I was on the silent retreat a couple of weeks ago, the weather was perfect. I mean, it was just magnificent. It was, you know, in the mid-70s maybe. It was warm, sunny, perfect blue skies, not a cloud in the sky most of the time. The fall colors were peak. We were right near the mountains on an abbey that also had farmland attached, and we were able to walk amongst the farmland. Some of you may have seen the pictures that I posted on Facebook, so you might have seen how beautiful it was. And when I was sitting there contemplating one day, sitting there in the country in this perfect weather, contemplating, and the contemplation, of course, was going into the realization, or towards the realization, that the world is not real, that the world comes from the mind, that the person, you know, what I would call I, is not real, that it is a part of the world which comes from the mind. And as I began to contemplate in this direction, a thought came in. And the thought that came in was that I really love sunny days in nature. That there's nothing I love more than sunny days in nature. And although, you know, awakening really sounds glorious, it will be a sacrifice to give up sunny days in nature, because they're heavenly. And I had to pause and look at that thought, because I could feel the sadness in my heart. In fact, I'm even feeling right now to go ahead and play another song. So let me jump over here and play another song. This is, in my lifetime, the lifetime of Regina Dawn Akers, my very favorite song, to the point that I have even asked my daughter and my friend Danielle that if something should happen to me, if I should die, that I would like this song played at my funeral. So let's just listen to this song. And while we're listening to this song, you know, imagine me, you know, sitting at the abbey out on the farmland, the perfect, perfect weather day, glorious sun, glorious blue sky, beautiful fall colors, absolutely peaceful, really enjoying the warmth on my body. And then the idea comes in that not having this experience would be a sacrifice. Here we go.
Sunshine on my shoulders makes me happy. Sunshine
in my eyes can make me cry. On the water looks so lovely, sunshine almost always makes me high. I could give you, I'd give to you a day just like today. If I had a song that I could sing, sing a song to make you feel this way. Sunshine on my shoulders makes me happy. Sunshine in my eyes can make me cry. Sunshine on the water looks so lovely. Sunshine almost I could tell you, I'd tell a tale sure to make you smile. If I had a wish that I could wish for, sunshine all the while. Sunshine on my shoulders makes me happy. Sunshine in my eyes can make me sunshine on the water looks so lovely. It's sunshine almost always makes me high. Almost all the time makes me high. Sunshine almost always.
So when you listen to that song, you are truly listening to the core of the personality of Regina. You know, there are a number of things that if you had known Regina all of her life, you would notice that changed, things that changed. You know, I mentioned the other day I'm really not interested in politics anymore, but at one point in my life I was a Republican. And then at another point in my life I was a Democrat. And now I have no interest in politics. That has changed, right? At one time I was a Southern Baptist. At another time, I was one of Jehovah's Witnesses. At another time, I was just, you know, partying or traveling and had no interest whatsoever in spirituality. And now I'm back on this path as kind of a Course in Miracles, NTI, Advaitas, interested person. You know, there's just been, you know, a lot of changes, but maybe the one thing that's always been consistent from the time that I was a very, very young girl until now and has never changed was my love of a beautiful, warm, sunny day. And being outside on a beautiful, warm, sunny day. You know, sometimes, here's how strong this thought is, all right? Is sometimes it does seem like everything else could be taken away from me. Remember, you know, the story of Job in the Bible, how God took everything away from him. You know, his wealth, his children, his own health. God took everything away from him. And Job still, however, praised God. But there's sort of this feeling in me that everything could be taken away from me, but as long as I still had warm, sunny days, I would be fine. What we're listening to is the description of an attachment. And not only that, it's the description of an attachment to a thought. I love warm, sunny days. I am always happy on warm, sunny days. As long as I can have some warm, sunny days in my life. You know, I could be in a wheelchair on a warm, sunny day. My family could be gone, but if I could just have those warm, sunny days, I'll be fine. Literally, I'm not making this up. The core of the Regina personality. I was very happy to see this attachment. Because if the core attachments are rising up to be seen, I think that that's a good sign. Because when it's rising up to be seen as an attachment, although the thought of sacrifice appeared with it when it showed up, what's really happening is that my willingness is showing me everything that is an obstacle to awakening. Even the one thing that I say, as long as I have this one thing. And it's showing me that. It's showing me, look how core this attachment is. Look how important you've made this thought. And then once the attachment showed up, do you know the next question that showed up? You know, you could say there was a little Byron Katie in my brain. Is that true? Is that true? Is it true that if I never experienced another warm, sunny day, that I would be unhappy? And you know what? It's not even true. It's not even true, because you know what? Warm, sunny days aren't the source of my happiness. That is just a thought that was in my mind, that every time the thought showed up, it was agreed with, but it was never questioned, and it was never looked at with clarity. You know, I loved the silent retreat. We had perfect, warm, sunny days. But is it true that if it had rained all week and been cold, that I would not have loved the silent retreat? I know that's not true. I know that I would have accepted the rainy, cold days as a gift. And if I'd spent the entire silent retreat in my little room, you know, with a bed and a sink, and had not come out except to eat meals, I would have trusted, I would have known that that was perfect. And I would have been grateful for the rainy days and for that little room and for having no place else to go. This is the way it is about thoughts. You see, when we believe thoughts, we believe illusions. If I believe the thought that warm, sunny days, sunshine on my shoulders makes me happy, I have that experience. And then I can even experience lack of happiness if it seems like I don't have sunshine. I can wish for the sunshine. I can crave the sunshine. But all that's happening is I'm believing thoughts. I'm attracted to an illusory idea about myself. All I need is the sun. If I'm willing to question every thought, I'm also willing to get beyond every illusion. If warm sunny days are the source of my happiness, then at some point when warm sunny days are not available to me, I cannot be happy. I'll always have duality if I believe this illusory idea about who I am. But when I realize it's nothing but a thought, when I realize it's not true, then I'm free. I'm free from the illusion. So that takes us back to number 377 in the journal. Thought and illusion are one. An attachment to thought is attachment to illusion. Letting go of the idea, all I need is the sun, is letting go of an illusory idea about who I am and what I need to be happy. All right, so we can scroll down and underneath the comment and reply area, click on number 378. And I will also post a link in the room. I noticed Lynn says she's not too keen on sunshine. She said LOL afterwards, but tell you what, Pueblo is not the place to live if you don't like the sun. Unless, of course, you're trying to break that attachment, because the sun does shine here almost every day. Number 378, I'm going to start by reading from the Seven Steps to Awakening. Consciousness reflecting in consciousness shines as consciousness and exists as consciousness. Yet, to one who is ignorant, though considering oneself as wise and rational, there arises the notion that there has come into being and there exists something other than this consciousness. So again, we're getting back to the tiny mad idea. The thought that there could be something other than heaven, other than truth, other than God, other than reality, other than consciousness, the mind of God, as A Course in Miracles would call it. That is also called ignorance. The common Advaita term is ignorance, when you believe in something other than consciousness or believe in something other than reality or God or self. So number 378 says, consciousness reflecting in consciousness shines as consciousness and exists as consciousness. Yet to one who is ignorant, though considering one's self as wise and rational, there arises the notion that there has come into being and there exists something other than this consciousness. All right, let's look at number 378 in the journal. Mind, and again, remember the word mind refers to everything that follows the tiny mat idea, right? Mind, perceiving itself as wisdom, believes thought and illusion have important meaning. This idea, perception, needs to be looked at. When am I, through attention given, in agreement that mind is wisdom? Does my heart support this agreement? What does the heart guide? The heart guides that true wisdom be recognized as itself, while mind is recognized as imposter. This recognition is manifest through the willingness to devalue mind, apparent body self, and world. Devaluation is not a sacrifice, as mind would say it is. To believe that devaluation is sacrifice is to believe mind is wisdom. Listen to the heart. Devaluation is love recognition of true wisdom shining through the heart. It is joyously practiced with patient devotion by one who yearns to know only true love reality. So we'll go through this one a little bit slowly. What you're really looking at is kind of a self-inquiry and rising responses or realizations that came as a result of contemplating number 378. So the first thing that's said here in the journal is, mind, perceiving itself as wisdom, believes thought and illusion have important meaning. Now, this is a common mistake that we make, even on the spiritual path, because we are so attached to this world and the belief that this body self is who I am. And even as some clarity begins to seep in regarding truth, even as corrective thoughts arrive and we follow those corrective thoughts, this idea that I am this person body and this world is real is still quite strong for some time. So what seems to happen is even the spirituality that we are learning, we learn through the filter of the idea that I am real, this world is real, and it matters. For example, there's a storm right now in the Northeast. I think she's a hurricane. Her name is Sandy. And I've seen her called Frankenstorm because it's near Halloween. I've seen her called the Perfect Storm. She is definitely a big storm with high winds. It may bring, you know, some dangerous flooding, dangerous wind damage to some people in the Northeast. One of the emails that I received this morning was an email basically requesting that I, you know, not just I, but everyone that received the email, basically requesting that we spend the day watching our mind and releasing everything in our mind that could make this storm stronger, so that the storm would become weaker and there would be less damage. I understand those kinds of requests. There's an idea in there that's not seen yet. The idea that's in there that has not been seen yet is the idea that this world matters. And as a result, what's really interesting is that even in the attempt to practice what the email practiced and to let go of any thoughts that I perceive may be strengthening the storm, with behind it the intent of weakening the storm, what I'm doing is believing the idea that this world matters. I'm actually within myself strengthening that idea, so that tomorrow or the next day, when something happens in my life, when my salary is taken away, I'm now very fearful because I'm still teaching myself that this world matters. Jesus talks about this in A Course in Miracles at the very beginning in the Miracles Principles. He basically tells us, as people who believe we are people, I don't know how else to say that, he tells us that miracles should not be under our conscious control. He says that miracles that we select can be, and this is a quote, although I'm usually terrible at quoting, these next few words are a quote. The miracles that we consciously select can be, and I quote, severely misguided. If I am trying to, I mean, it's wonderful to let go of anger thoughts, just to let go of anger thoughts. It's wonderful to let go of attack thoughts, fear thoughts. But if behind it, I am letting them go with the intent of affecting something in the world, what I'm teaching myself is that the world still matters, and I will suffer that lesson. In other words, my intention is severely misguided. And you can see how these mistakes happen. They happen because we haven't yet unlearned the idea, I am a body and the world is real. So we get our spirituality, which we are learning, and our false beliefs, which we have not yet unlearned, confused. So, back to 378. Mind, perceiving itself as wisdom, believes thought and illusion have important meaning. This idea of perception needs to be looked at. And now what we're reading is the self-inquiry that I asked in the process of looking at this belief that mind is wisdom. When am I, through attention given, in agreement that mind is wisdom? And this is a question that each person can ask themselves. But whenever there is any problem in the world, it could be what appears to be a personal problem, like personal financial problems, personal worry or concern about the choices my children are making, or it could be what appears to be world issues, like a storm, politics, who's going to be elected, what their policies are. Whenever my mind is occupied with these problems, with the idea that these problems need to be solved because somehow they are bad, they are causing suffering, these problems are causing suffering. By the way, that's just blame. Whenever I am believing that, I am also believing that mind is wisdom. Mind is saying to me, the storm needs to weaken in order for there to be happiness. Mind is saying to me, this political policy needs to be put in place in order for there to be happiness. My child needs to choose to live their life a certain way in order for there to be happiness. And I'm saying, you're right, mind. You're wisdom. I join you in that belief, and now I will put my efforts, my worry, my fear, my concern, my manipulation into trying to make that happen. Because you, O Lord, O mind, say I need it that way. And in doing that, I set myself up as a person victim in a world that is very real. When am I, through the attention that I give to a particular problem, be it personal, national, or international, or universal, when am I, through attention given, in agreement that mind is wisdom? Where do I do that? And only after identifying where I do that. So the first question has to be answered first. Only after I am aware where I do that, then the next question becomes, does my heart... And heart here is a symbol. A Course in Miracles uses the symbol Holy Spirit or right mind. But using a different symbol that I used earlier in this teaching, it would be corrective thought. Still illusory, remember, but moving back towards reality. Corrective thought. Thought that is loosening my attachment to the world instead of increasing it. That's corrective thought. That's Holy Spirit, that's right mind, that's heart. Does my heart support this agreement? And the answer to that, in my case, every time I've checked with honesty, is no. And in fact, I just a moment ago gave you a core belief that I looked at. Maybe the only belief, possibly the only belief that has been consistent in my lifetime, that sunshine makes me happy. The song I want played at my funeral because it represents my entire life. When I looked at that with my heart, with the corrective thought that is detaching me from the illusion, it did not support that belief. It did not agree and say, yes, that's who you are. You are the one that can always be happy as long as you have sunshine. It did not do that. Nor does it support me in believing that I need Sandy to grow weak. Nor has it ever supported me in believing that I needed my child or my significant other or my parents to think or be another way. It has never supported me in believing that I need anything to be a certain way. because if it were to support me in believing that I needed something about the body or the world to be a certain way, then it would also be supporting me in keeping my attachment to illusion. And it never does that. Do you know what it tells me? It tells me that I'm unaffected by everything in this world. It tells me that my peace, my joy, my happiness, my freedom is completely unaffected. And what it wants me to do is that as things seem to shift and change, as things seem to be the way the personality would define them as good, and as things seem to be the way the personality would define them as bad, so as things seem to shift and change between, quote, good and bad, what it wants me to do is recognize the I that is unaffected. What is unaffected? That's where it keeps focusing my attention. What was the same when there was money as when there wasn't money? What was the same when there was health as when there wasn't health? What was the same when people seemed to be praising you as when people seemed to be insulting you, as when people seemed to be not even noticing you? What is the same whether the sun shines or not? It keeps focusing me on that. And it never supports my agreement with the mind that something needs to be a certain way. It always asks me to release that agreement, to notice that every agreement with mind has a flip side, and instead focus on that which never changes, that which does not have a flip side, or as the Course puts it, it has no opposite. So the next thing on number 378, what does the heart guide? The heart guides that true wisdom be recognized as itself, while mind is recognized as an imposter. So it's not true that I can be happy as long as I have sunny days. That is not a true thought. It is not true that suffering is caused by Sandy, the storm. That's not a true thought. You see, if Sandy was the cause of suffering, then reducing Sandy's strength would be helpful. But it's not even a true thought that Sandy is the cause of suffering. That's a blame thought. That's like saying, Laurent was the cause of my misery. If I had believed that in my relationship with Laurent, I would not have the state of mind that I have now. The state of healing that I have now would not have been accomplished if I had believed that he was the cause of my misery. This is where I had to take responsibility. I needed to realize that my suffering is only caused by ideas in my mind, not Laurent, not Sandy. What does the heart guide? The heart guides that true wisdom be recognized as itself, while mind is recognized as imposter. This recognition is manifest through the willingness to devalue mind, apparent body, self, and world. What does it mean to devalue? Well, it means it's the opposite of putting value on. So it would be the opposite of giving my attention to mind, of listening to mind, of doing what mind says. You know, the opposite of trying to manipulate and control in order to achieve the means that mind says are necessary. That's devalue. You know, one of the tools for me that's been really helpful in the devalue process is mantra. I wrote about this in Facebook the other day, how I'm now on my fifth mantra. And I'm not going to go into each mantra and how each one has served me. Each one has served me. But the mantra that I have now is, be still and know I am God. So the way this works for me is if I start getting caught up in some thought of mind, if mind puts an idea out there, boom, here's something that's important. Here's something you need to think about. Here's something you need to work on. Here's something that needs to be a certain way. And my attention starts going to mind. Ah, mind, you're right. That is important. I do need to focus on that. I do need to manipulate that situation a little bit. I do need that to work out a certain way. And then I notice myself. What I do then is I devalue mind. I accidentally gave it value. Now I'm going to devalue it. And I devalue it by, in my case, returning calmly and with devotion to my mantra, be still and know I am God. I do not run immediately back to the problem and say, okay, I said my mantra. Now, what were you saying, mind, about this issue? I drop it. And if it starts to rise up again because of some remnant of attention, I say the mantra again and I drop it again. And what I find in my case is that if I am consistent with this mantra and this willingness to devalue, eventually that thought, that idea does not rise again. Of course, another day, at least in my experience, another thought is born, but then the process is the same. Instead of giving it attention, I devalue it by focusing love and devotion on my mantra. What does the heart guide? The heart guides that true wisdom be recognized as itself, while mind is recognized as imposter. This recognition is manifest through the willingness to devalue mind, apparent body self, and world. The truth is, whenever you devalue mind, you are also simultaneously devaluing body self and world. Because everything that mind is going to try and get you to listen to think about, has to do with body, self, or world. So simply by choosing not to value the thoughts, I'm also choosing not to value the body, self, and the world. Devaluation is not a sacrifice, as the mind would say it is. And mind will come up with those ideas that it's a sacrifice, that, you know, this thing is important. And I'm not going to be happy or comfortable without it. And the idea that I should say a mantra instead of thinking about it, instead of doing something about it, is just going to cause me to sacrifice. All that's doing is still believing mind is wisdom. It's still believing mind knows who I am and what will make me happy. That's all that is. Without the belief that mind is wisdom, there could be no belief in sacrifice. At some point, that shift has to happen, and it happens through willingness. At some point, that shift has to happen where I see that mind is not wisdom. Mind does not know what will make me happy. So that I can devalue mind, devalue thoughts, devalue its, quote, solutions to, quote, problems. And the more that I truly see this for myself, the more I honestly know that mind isn't wisdom, and therefore ignoring mind, devaluing mind, is not a sacrifice. It's the best thing I can do for myself. Because all mind is going to do is keep me trapped in misery, trapped in worry, trapped in manipulating, trapped in having to have things a certain way. It's going to keep me caught up in this Well, the image I have now is like a hamster running in a wheel. It's going to keep me caught up running in that wheel, running and running and running and running and never going anywhere. But when I see that's all that's happening, whoops, hold on, lots of weird stuff is going on here. Must be Sandy, someone said. Is that, are you guys having the weird stuff too? Hold on. Are you able to hear me now? Can you hear me now? Maybe not. Let's try this again. Can you hear me now? All right, I'm going to leave the room and come back. Not that you heard that. Who was I saying that to? All right. Going now back into Pal Talk. Can you hear me now? Yay! Okay. Yay! All right, I'm back. Yeah. Okay, so let's see. Where was I? I was talking about devaluation is not a sacrifice. Did you guys hear that? Part of that? That the only reason I would think devaluation was a sacrifice is if I believed the mind is wisdom. But when I see, you know, what the Course calls seek and do not find, when I see that the mind is not wisdom, it's just going to keep me working on one problem after another, after another, after another, and I'm never going to be happy because I'm always worried, right? When I see that for myself, then I will start to realize mind is not the answer. And then I do not see devaluation as a sacrifice. I see it as the answer, right? And I'm happy to do my mantra. Or whatever process I'm using to devalue mind, I'm happy to do it. So devaluation is not a sacrifice, as mind would say. To believe that devaluation is a sacrifice is to believe that mind is wisdom. Listen to the heart. Devaluation, now listen, this is heart's description, so much different than the idea of sacrifice. Devaluation is love recognition of true wisdom shining through the heart. See, this is when we return to the mantra with such joy. We see our mind starting to worry about Sandy, or we see our mind starting to worry about our financials, or our child, or our spouse. And then we recognize, I'm listening to mind again. And we also know, I don't want to do this. That's not my answer. And so with love recognition of what true wisdom is, we return to our mantra. Be still and know I am God. And we are happy to drop those thought processes. No sacrifice. Devaluation is love recognition of true wisdom shining through the heart. It is joyously practiced with patient devotion by one who yearns to know only true love reality. It is joyously practiced with patient devotion. Every time the mind starts up again and we notice it again, we with love and joy return to the mantra with patient devotion. It is joyously practiced with patient devotion by one who yearns, right? My quest, the impossible dream, yearns. That's what that song that we heard Andy Williams sing at the beginning. That's what it describes, is that yearning, right? That quest. It is joyously practiced with patient devotion by one who yearns to know only true love reality. No sacrifice in that. That's taking the happiness that I used to think came from the sunshine on my shoulders, and now it's happiness with just knowing what I truly want, devaluing mind, returning to that mantra, returning to that stillness. Now that is the sunshine. It's not the physical sun. It's the sunshine of not listening to mind. Because the mind is the clouds, right? So the sunshine comes from not listening to mind, not getting caught up. Now I can say sunshine on my shoulders makes me happy, because now I'm no longer looking at the physical sun. It's that inner sunshine that comes from not listening to mind. Right? Now sunshine makes me happy. Now that it's symbolic, it's no longer an attachment. I don't think I want to do any more. I'm sitting here looking at the clock thinking, oh, 8 minutes, I could maybe start another one. But I don't think I want to. I think I would really like to relax, devalue the mind, and listen to these same two songs again, if that's okay. Now we'll listen to John Denver's Sunshine on My Shoulder again, but this time with the realization that it's the inner sunshine. Right? That's what we want to sing songs about. That's what we want to give as our only gift, is by always staying present on the inner sunshine, by not listening to mind. And then we'll close with Andy Williams' The Impossible Dream again, and realize that we want to practice that devaluation because we yearn to. It's not a sacrifice. We yearn to devalue the mind and to realize truth. So why don't we just listen to these two songs? That's what I want to do. So here is first John Denver.
Sunshine on my shoulders makes me happy. Sunshine in my eyes can make me cry. Sunshine on the water looks so lovely. Sunshine almost always makes me high. I could give you I'd give to you a day just like today. If I had a song that I could sing for you, I'd sing a song to make you feel this way. Sunshine on my shoulders makes me happy. Sunshine sunshine in my eyes can make me cry. On the water looks so lovely. Sunshine almost always makes me high. If I I could tell you, I'd tell a tale sure to make you smile. If I had a wish that I could wish for, I'd make a wish for sunshine all the while. Sunshine's on my shoulders makes me happy. Sunshine in my eyes can make me cry.
I've turned down John Denver. Now that we realize we want the inner sunshine by devaluing the mind, which is the clouds, let's yearn for it. So we're switching over to Andy Williams, which is going to help us yearn for it. Here we go.
Fight the unbeatable foe, to bear with unbearable sorrow, to run where the brave dare not go, to right the unrightable wrong, to be better far than you are, to try when your arms are too weary, to reach the unreachable star. This is my quest, to follow that star. No matter how hopeless, no matter how far, to be willing to give when there's no more to give, to be willing to die so that honor and justice may live. And I know if I'll only be true to this glorious quest, that my heart will lie peaceful and calm when I'm laid to my rest. And the world will be better for this, that one man scorned and covered with scars still strove with his last ounce of courage to dream the impossible dream, to reach the unreachable star.
All right, that's it for me. I'll see you guys next Monday, actually, because I'm going to San Diego this weekend. So I'll see you next Monday. Bye.